Hello and welcome to the Sound of Economics podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. My name is Guntram Wolf and I'm the director at Bruegel. And I bring to you today our director's cut, in which I interview Bruegel scholars, other academics, as well as policymakers on current issues of the day. Today I'm very pleased to host Nicolas Veron, senior fellow here at Bruegel, to talk about deposit insurance. Now, back in 2012, Nicolas, we wrote a paper, a couple of Bruegel scholars, you and myself including, on banking union, and we sort of identified three pillars for banking union. One was supervision, one was resolution, and one was deposit insurance. We made a lot of progress on the supervision. We basically have a single supervisor. We made quite a bit of progress on the resolution side, but deposit insurance is basically a file that is stuck in the policymaking process for quite some time now. So perhaps to start, you can start explaining to our listeners what is a deposit insurance and why do deposit insurance actually matter in principle?
Yeah, deposit insurance is an explicit public guarantee on insured deposits, which in European law is currently defined as any deposit up to 100,000 euro per account. And the idea is really to protect the payment system. So this goes with the concept of dealing with moral hazard in managing banking crisis, that not all banks will be bailed out, not all creditors of a failing bank will be bailed out, but you have to protect the core business of retail deposits, the smaller depositors, which are also the more numerous, in order to keep the public trust in the fact, in the integrity of the payment system. So, you know, there's a lot of technological innovation out there. People are talking about central bank currencies or cryptocurrencies, things that would allow retail households and small businesses to have a direct account with the central bank. But at this point, this is still science fiction. So the reality is that your current account is still at the bank, and that has to be protected by the public authorities no matter what, in order for the system to operate with the necessary degree of confidence. So that's why we have deposit insurance. It emerged gradually in history. The big breakthrough, of course, was the big banking crisis in the US in the early 30s, especially in early 1933, after which the US introduced deposit insurance there, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and after that it was emulated at different times by different European countries. In the crisis, we discovered that different systems, different levels of protection of deposits in different member states created dynamics of financial fragmentation. Right. And therefore, there was a need for harmonization. But then we discovered something more, and that's the 2012 debate that you alluded to, is that if we keep the deposit insurance at the national level, that means that if a country has a big problem, for example, sovereign solvency, then the deposit insurance is impaired. We had actually that situation in Cyprus, and therefore there is fragmentation of the Eurozone financial space. So to avoid that, you need a European deposit insurance.
So let's zoom in on that a little bit more. So of course, as you rightly pointed out, deposit insurance is about essentially trust of households and of wholesale into the quality and safety of the deposit. Now, why exactly do we need this at the level of the Eurozone? Why does it have to be a unified system? After all, in all these different countries of the Eurozone, of the EU, we all have individual deposit insurance. They all are now, as you say, harmonized. So basically the deposit insurance should be the same for banks in all the different countries. And there's also a presumption that, you know, if a country really gets into trouble, there will be some form of a financial assistance program to help the country, the fiscal authorities of the country, to avoid the worst. And presumably, in that context, you would expect that deposits actually remain protected. So perhaps you can sort of untangle that and explain to us why European deposit insurance in principle. And you know what do you need on top of basically an ESM financial assistance mechanism for member states that implicitly, but not explicitly, would insure deposits as well?
So the key point in your description of the current framework is presumably. You said presumably deposits will be protected. That's not enough.
Right.
So deposit insurance needs to work at a very basic level of trust. We're talking about millions of retail account holders, and a bank run can happen very quickly when there is just a limited amount of doubt on the protection of deposits. And this is exactly what we saw in Cyprus in 2013. Presumably the deposits were protected, but it just turned out that in the discussion of the assistance program by the European Stability Mechanism, as you said, there was a bit of a glitch in the negotiation. At some point, everybody said, oh, but we can actually breach the deposit insurance. Technically, it was a tax on deposits, but that amounts to the same thing. And that completely destroyed trust in the system. Cyprus had to impose capital controls. It was a major game changer and not in a positive direction. So we had that experience in Cyprus. It can happen again. And what is needed to avoid the kind of fragmentation again of the Eurozone financial space in the future is something that is not presumably a protection. It's certainly ironclad, absolutely, unequivocally, unconditionally a protection of all covered deposits, right, insured deposits. And the only way to make that independent of sovereign credit, of the fact that the signature of a member state may not be as good as the level that is required for that trust, the only way to do it is to give the promise, not at the national, but at the European level. In a way, this is a whole debate about what the worst case scenario in the Eurozone, a debate right, that the Eurozone has escaped or has tried to escape when the Euro was created. What we need, and that's a big lesson of the crisis, we need to entrench the perception that if everything goes wrong, if all else fails, what will happen is an orderly debt restructuring of the country that has a problem, and that shouldn't fragment the financial system. So the worst case scenario has to be a sovereign default within the Eurozone, but with financial stability and with no forced exit right, from the Eurozone, what the technical jargon calls redenomination risk. And for that to work, you need a European deposit insurance.
Okay, so Nicola, I think up to now we are, I think, in broad agreement, and I think we've been writing on these issues before in a variety of different formats, including in testimonies to the European Parliament and so on. Now I want you to sort of explain to us your recent blog post that you co-authored with Isabel Schnabel, in which you make quite a specific proposal of how to change the European deposit insurance proposal that is already on the table. So the European Commission has been tabling a proposal, I think, 2 years ago, and it's stuck since then. And I think the reason why it's stuck relates, of course, to the feeling and the unwillingness of many member states, the feeling in many member states that there are still far too many national policies that influence the likelihood of a bank actually entering into a gray zone or in a zone where a deposit insurance may be needed. So there is a rejection of pooling the deposit insurance because of the, while acknowledging that there's a single supervision, because of the still existing fragmentation in banking policies. And so now you make a proposal in which you, I think, try to overcome that problem while still having the same quality of the deposit insurance. And perhaps you can explain to our reader how that would work, and then we debate a little bit to what extent it works.
So the proposal, thanks for introducing this recent work, and the proposal was first made actually not just by Isabel Schnabel and me, but in a collective report that was published in January by 14 French and German economists, so we call it the Franco-German Euro Report, of which two actually have a Bruegel affiliation because Jean Pisani-Ferry also is one of the report's co-authors. And the report outlines a comprehensive program for the reform of the Eurozone, including a design that we think aligns the incentives properly for European deposit insurance. So what is, and then we co-authored a blog with Isabel Schnabel, as you mentioned, that just explains this proposal as set out in the Franco-German Euro report. So what is the proposal? The proposal makes an attempt, which I think is both novel, and I will try to convince you and the audience that it's compelling, of squaring this circle. So the point is that there is a need for a really trustworthy and unconditional deposit insurance, as we discussed before. And at the same time, as you just said, there are still plenty of national policies and national policy instruments that means that the assessment of risk cannot be the same in all member states. So how to square the circles that calls for a European framework with, at the same time, a degree of national differentiation? Our response is to say the promise of the deposit insurance has to be credibly country-blind. The promise is the same whether your deposit is held in Cyprus, Greece, the Netherlands, Finland, Germany, France, any Eurozone member state, or more specifically, any member state of the banking union, including if it expands in the future to non-Eurozone countries, as is possible. So that's a promise, it's country-blind. But the financing of the system, which has to take into account risk factors, cannot be country-blind, at least for the foreseeable future, as long as you have all these differentiation through national policy frameworks, insolvency law, taxation frameworks, pension finance, housing finance, you name it. There are plenty of labor market regulations. There are plenty of things that affect the risk of a bank and national banking system structures, frankly, that affect the risk that goes into this. So in theory, it could be tackled with a bank-level risk assessment that would integrate those risk factors, but there is an understandable fear in at least some member states that this would be, the national differences would be watered down in that assessment, and it's not an exact science. So the idea is to keep the national differentiation in this framework. How do we do it? We have so-called national compartments, which are very similar, that's a bit of jargon, to what exists currently in the transition period of the Single Resolution Fund, which is a separate instrument that has already been agreed by all member states and is in the process of, is established, but is in the process of being gradually mutualized. So during this transition towards full mutualization of the Single Resolution Fund, there are national compartments whose overall size is a proportion of the total amount of covered deposits in the country. Insured deposits. And we would do the same, but just we would keep it in the steady state. So the deposit insurance system would be national compartments with a little tweak that there would be also special compartments for banking subsystems that have their own deposit insurance mechanisms. So for example, the German savings banks, or the German cooperative banks, or the Italian Bank of Cooperative Credit, or the Portuguese agricultural mutual banks. These are the main examples right now. And all these compartments, the national ones and the special ones, would be part of a system that also has a mutualized element. So if a national compartment or a special compartment is depleted, then the further loss is taken by the mutualized part of the system. And then if that is also depleted, you have a backstop from the European Stability Mechanism, as is currently being negotiated for the Single Resolution Fund.
So is it a reinsurance or not?
It's not a reinsurance because there is one single institutional system, and that's important to ensure that the promise of deposit insurance is really identical in all countries. So basically, we deprive the member states, in a way, of the discretion to add national bells and whistles to the deposit insurance, including by asking banks to have ring-fence capital and liquidity in the national framework, which is a widespread practice now. So one of the great advantages of this proposal is that it allows to phase out national ring-fencing of capital and liquidity, which is a big obstacle right now to having cross-border banks that would contribute to breaking the vicious circle between banks and sovereigns, which is itself the high-level objective of the banking union policy. But so the Single Resolution Board in practice would manage the whole system, maybe under a different name, but that's secondary, and would manage the compartments as well as the mutualized part of the system, also financially. But there would be this continued differentiation in segregated accounts, if you will, to have a waterfall of risk that creates the right incentives for member states, plus an additional element, which would be a modulation of the deposit insurance fee, so an add-on or a discount, based on the quality of creditor protection policies. So if you have you know, high quality insolvency law, court processes, out of court settlements, and things that protect creditors, then you would have to pay less.
Well, I think I basically agree with almost everything you said, and I think I've been actually always pushing you on the point that country-specific regulation other than supervision matter hugely for the likelihood of deposit insurance to be used or not to be used, and therefore we need some form of country differentiation. So having said that, also on Twitter and so on, you got a lot of heat. And I think one of the criticisms that I'm making and that many others are making is that by continuing to have the differences in the fee structure, essentially on the fees on the deposit, you will in fact continue to keep differences in the price for deposits across different countries of the Eurozone. And so the pricing, so what banks have to pay to attract deposits, will still be different in different countries depending on the quality of the country. And so this fragmentation you don't overcome. I think we agree on that, actually.
The way we see it in the group, and particularly with Isabel Schnabel, is indeed that there is differentiation. I wouldn't call it fragmentation. It's just a differentiation that reflects existing differences between national banking markets that have not been phased out, that have not been ironed out. So it's not fragmentation, it's a continuation of national differences that are going to probably disappear over time, and if they have disappeared enough, then we can get rid of those national compartments. And actually a big part of the debate on the price differentiations that you were alluding to is the calibration of the whole thing. How big is the national difference? That depends on the phase of replenishment of national compartments and things like that. So there are many different parameters that you can adjust in the design of the system in order to mitigate those effects and to make sure that you don't create a new kind of vicious circle, being understood that our concept of national differentiation is completely uncorrelated, and that's very important, from sovereign credit risk.
Yes.
So it's not the old vicious circle. It would be a different thing based on banking structures and the frequency of banking solvencies, basically. So all these issues have to be kept in mind in the fine-tuning of the system, but they're eminently addressable. They're not fatal flaws. And again, the differentiation we have is a step towards further harmonization and the ultimate vision of a single banking market, but which is still, we have to be honest, a distant vision. So basically what our argument, to summarize, is to say we can break the vicious circle between banks and sovereigns pretty soon with this kind of proposal before we get to the nirvana of a completely harmonized banking market in the Eurozone, which is a more distant objective. And I think this sequence actually is very parallel to what is being discussed in the European Union with Capital Markets Union. So basically what we're saying is there is a short-term achievable objective of breaking the vicious circle. For that, we need deposit insurance, but we also need other reforms, such as, you know, addressing concentrated sovereign risks in Eurozone banks. And then we have a longer sequence of full harmonization of the banking market, capital markets, and the financial system more generally, but that will be several decades as opposed to several years.
Great, wonderful. I think that brings us to the end. I think we've learned that this is a very concrete proposal where differentiation will continue to exist, but that differentiation will not be a function of sovereign risk anymore. And I think that would be a huge achievement, of course, if we achieve that. And so certainly, I think your proposal is absolutely worthwhile to be discussed and to be considered further. With that, having said all of this, I think we've taken our 20 minutes almost to discuss a very interesting topic. Thank you, Nicola, for taking the time today, and until next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Guntram, for having me.
Bye-bye.